Hello, I'm Megan Bell, the Director of Engagement at Daylight and your host. Welcome to Illuminate Philanthropy, a podcast dedicated to illuminating the world of philanthropic advisory, enhancing the profession, and amplifying its impact. We have just wrapped up our inaugural series of Illuminate Philanthropy, which focused on adapting to the 8 key trends in philanthropic advising. These trends included shifts in client demographics, evolving definitions, various giving vehicles, challenging established norms, growing mistrust, wealth planning, utilizing AI for good, and navigating a complex marketplace. In this exciting new series of Illuminate Philanthropy, we're bringing you face-to-face with the thought leaders and changemakers shaping the future of philanthropy. Join us as we connect with members of Daylight's faculty, learners, and advisory board. Seasoned practitioners who are driving real transformative change in the sector. Each episode offers a unique firsthand perspective filled with innovative ideas, practical insights, and inspiring stories that highlight the power of philanthropy to create lasting social good. Our guests just don't talk about theory. They share their lived experiences, offering behind-the-scenes looks at how they're working with communities, organizations, and clients to push the boundaries of what philanthropy can achieve. From the art of storytelling to the power of collaborative funding and the need for greater diversity with advisory roles, we're spotlighting the individuals who are redefining what it means to make a meaningful impact. Tune in to hear the powerful efforts and bold initiatives that are shaping the future of social change.
Yeah. And we're sort of, you know, in a period of uncertainty and in many ways that's uncharted. And so I think it's more imperative than ever for philanthropy writ large, but also the nonprofit sector, to be able to be strong storytellers. It's critical because I think, you know, we're talking about organizations and we're talking about funders that in many ways may have to sort of make up the difference in providing necessary and vital services to people.
In this episode, we sit down with Seth Klukoff, a passionate faculty member at Daylight and an IPA learner, to explore the transformative power of storytelling in the realm of philanthropy. Storytelling has evolved far beyond a passing trend. It has emerged as an essential skill for entrepreneurs, business leaders, and advocates alike. Its importance in the business landscape, particularly within philanthropy, cannot be emphasized enough. At its essence, storytelling is about weaving narratives that not only embody your brand's identity, but also forge deep connections with your audience. It's an art of crafting tales that are not just relatable, but truly unforgettable. Join us as we unpack the nuances of storytelling and discover how it can inspire action, foster empathy, and ultimately drive meaningful change in the world of philanthropy. But before we do, let's start with Seth's story. Seth is the principal of EON Strategies, a consultancy specializing in thought leadership and communication. With 30 years of experience in strategic communications, he has worked with various organizations, including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the National Science Foundation. Seth previously held the role of Vice President of Thought Leadership at Equal Measure and has experience in public health communications. He holds a Master in Journalism from Northern University and a BA in Political Science from the University of Michigan. Currently, he serves on the National Steering Committee for the National Network of Consultants to Grantmakers, and in his free time, Seth enjoys walking, jigsaw puzzles, reading history, watching Abbott Elementary, which my son loves and always talks about the fourth wall, and supporting Philadelphia and University of Michigan sports. So, Seth, did I represent you accurately? Did I tell your story?
You told my story, although, you know, it depends when this is going to be aired, but, you know, I'll still hold honest to being an all Philadelphia sports fan. you know, sometimes it hurts the soul, but you just have to kind of grin and bear it.
You do. You do. And you guys have bared it before. You'll bear it again. So I appreciate your allegiance and your alliance. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, it is so great to have you here, Seth. I know there's so much more I could have said and shared about you, but that was my effort to summarize all that you've done in your career and your expertise. We are so grateful to have you here. I have the pleasure of actually being in your IPA cohort. Mm-hmm. So I've loved learning and having you as a trust and thought partner for me. So thank you.
Likewise.
But before we get started and before you share with us your work and particularly the importance of storytelling and philanthropy, I want to hear more about your philanthropic journey. How did you get into philanthropy?
Yeah, so I'll take us back to Bucharest, Romania. Wow. When I was 8 years old, and my father received a one-year Fulbright scholarship to teach at the University of Bucharest. He taught English. And so my family was relocated from Margate, New Jersey to Bucharest, Romania. And rather than live with a lot of the U.S. diplomatic folks and the embassy folks, we lived with the Romanian people in an apartment complex just outside the city. And it was kind of a post-World War II apartment complex. And it was, a great opportunity to meet friends and just, become really good friends with Romanian kids. And so we went to the playground, virtually every day after school and, kind of learned how to speak the language of the playground. And became, it's interesting. There was one kid, I'll never forget this. He would call me Hank. And he called me Hank because he associated Americans with Hank Aaron, who at the time was just about to hit his break, Babe Ruth's home run record. And so, at a very early age, it really kindled my interest in just wanting to learn about different cultures and different people across the globe, as well as in my own country. I'll add to that, the school that I went to in Romania was a diplomatic school, but there were kids from all over the world there, all parts of the globe. And it was an opportunity to meet them, become friends, and some of whom I still, remember to this day. But it really just kind of kindled my intellectual interest in wanting to understand cultures and just kind of think what they think, feel how they feel, and do what they do, and just learn more about that. And so because of all that, it led me to want to become a journalist. And that, however, was short-lived. I worked for a little bit for Investors Business Daily in Washington, but then very quickly moved into the nonprofit world, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and was there. And then let's fast forward until the early 2000s when we relocated back to New Jersey and worked for the Center for Healthcare Strategies, which is a organization that focuses on publicly funded care. And that was really my first official entry into the world of philanthropy. We did a lot of work with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And really, I think the work that we did with them, it taught me about the importance of a learning thought partner relationship with the funder. The relationship that CHCS had with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation was not transactional. It also, again, it really kind of taught me the importance of, the foundation and philanthropy as a learning partner. Mm-hmm. I then went to work for Worldway Social Marketing, and that gave me an opportunity to kind of have a number of on-the-ground experiences helping to shape public health campaigns in Delaware and in Ohio. And that really kind of emphasized the role of philanthropy in improving lives. Yeah. And also kind of really introduced me to the importance of storytelling as an essential component of philanthropy as well. And two quick stories that I'd like to share related to that.
Sure.
Both would stick with me indelibly to this day. One is when I was working on a public health campaign around childhood obesity in Wilmington, Delaware, did a focus group in a church basement talking to parents who lived in that community. And, several of the parents would talk about how they would take 20-minute bus rides from after work. So they would leave work in the evening, take the 20-minute bus ride to their closest supermarket and do the shopping, bring the groceries back on the bus and come home. And this time is like, you know, 9 o'clock, 9:30 at night. And they would do it, you know, once a week and in the not the safest of communities.
Sure.
And they did it because they wanted to put food on the table for their kids. And then, you know, a similar story in a project I worked on in Dayton, Ohio, also around healthy eating and physical activity and trying to eradicate, you know, childhood obesity. Was talking to students, you know, in an after school, you know, after elementary school program. And the kids would all, I think all the kids, you know, that we talked to, you know, can say, you know, we go to bed hungry at night. You know, if there's a day where we can have three full meals, that's great. And, you know, those were their stories. And we'll talk a little bit later about, you know, the authenticity of stories in the voices of the people who are telling the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really sort of hit home the importance of storytelling as a part of philanthropy.
Yeah.
And then to kind of shift to my time at Equal Measure, that was really a deepening and an expansion of my work in philanthropy. Working with different types of foundations and nonprofits, and, you know, the importance of viewing those relationships and the work of our clients through an equity lens
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think, you know, also learn the importance of thought leadership as an organizational strategy, within philanthropy too. And we can maybe talk more about that a little bit later as well. So just to kind of bring this back full circle, you know, I think the experience that I had as a kid really kind of shaped my intellectual curiosity and the desire to learn more and ask a lot of questions over the course of my career, which I think has become very important just in the work that I do in and around the philanthropic sector.
I'm just thrilled that you are here to share with us more about and going more deeper into the storytelling. I want to back up, though, I know I mentioned this in the intro, but you're also very involved with Daylight. Not only you are in the inaugural cohort IPA certification with me, you're also a faculty member of Daylight, and I believe it's our next module that you helped author. So I'd love to just hear, how did you get involved with Daylight? Why is Daylight important to you? What do you think Daylight has to share with the world and other advisors?
Yeah, no, I think was introduced to Daylight through a mutual colleague, Tony Macklin. And I know Tony Macklin through our mutual involvement on the National Network of Consultants to Grant Makers and our time together on the steering committee there. And as Tony and Deanne and others were working on the development of the IPA, mm-hmm. you know, Tony reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in working on this particular module? And so we talked more about it. Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, absolutely, 100%. This sounds right up my alley, right up and extremely important for the sector right now. And so I was happy to hop on board and do it. And no regrets at all. And I think it's also important because, you know, as somebody who works with foundations, and, you know, as somebody who sort of focuses on the kind of the inextricable link between thought leadership and storytelling and philanthropy, I really think the content of the IPA program is invaluable. You know, we cover all aspects of the consultative relationship between the advisor and the philanthropist, but importantly, within the broader context of trends in the social sector. Right. So it's not a conversation and it's in isolation. It's a conversation that's of the moment mm-hmm. and of where we are going mm-hmm. As a sector as well. And so it's super important in that respect. And so I know that it'll make me a better consultant and a better partner just by being exposed to this knowledge and being exposed to new folks and new colleagues who are going through this program and the cohort as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I believe your module is around defining purpose and strategy, correct?
That you've yeah, yeah.
And just for our listeners, if you haven't figured out, IPA means Impact Philanthropic Advisor. So when we refer to IPA, it is not a beer. it is a certified Impact Philanthropy Advisor program. You know, your work is focused a lot on thought leadership, strategic communication, storytelling, and narrative change. And these concepts I know are really important, and particularly in philanthropy. So can you describe those concepts first and foremost? Like, what do we mean by thought leadership, strategic communication, and storytelling and narrative change? And then help demystify for our listeners these concepts. So let's start with thought leadership. How do we define that?
I would boil thought leadership down to three very basic components. I think, you know, you have to have a distinct point of view or a stance for thought leadership. That's where it all has to flow from. It's like, what do you believe in? What are you passionate about? Like, why are you here? And why should I listen to you? So I think you have to have that point of view that kind of stems from, and we can talk when we get to the storytelling piece, we can talk about sort of your kind of, you know, personal story and set of core values. But I think, you know, thought leadership has to start with that point of view. Secondly, you have to have something to say, right? You have to have knowledge that's going to tie back to that point of view. It's the support. And it's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake, right? Because you could put out a lot of thought leadership and it could sit in computer files or on shelves. I don't know if things sit on shelves anymore, but that's, you know, you can just kind of put a lot of words out there into the ether sphere. But if they're not tied back to a point of view, and if they don't inspire your audiences to act and to do something, then it's, you know, it's not worth it, I think, just to be blunt. So I think first you have to have a point of view. And then secondly, you have to have the knowledge that's going to inspire your audiences to act. Third component is, I think, just an understanding of the right platforms and venues that you need to share this with, right? And that this kind of gets back to audiences as well. You can have the best ideas, you can have the strongest point of view, but if you're not talking to the right people, and if you're not talking to them where they are, like, some people aren't always going to be on social media, some people don't attend professional conferences, some people don't read blogs. So you have to really think about, you know, who are your audiences and where are they? And so if you kind of hit this sort of trifecta, then I think you're on the road to doing thought leadership well. So that's thought leadership. I think thought leadership is also an organizational strategy too. There's sort of an external component to thought leadership, which I was just sharing, but there's an internal component, which maybe we could talk about a little bit later as well. Then we can move to strategic communications. I think, again, a lot of definitions here. I would say that strategic communications is sort of the thoughtful mix of audiences, messages, and tools. I see strategic communications as really the driver or the engine for thought leadership. So if you think about thought leadership as the why, or the what and the so what, strategic communications is the how and the when and the where. And so I think that's, so I think if you look at that as a hierarchy, see, there's thought leadership and there's strategic communications. And then we could talk about storytelling. And I really see storytelling as strategic communications done well. Storytelling has to be a means to a tangible goal. There has to be a very clear end. Lots of people have stories. There are a lot of storytellers. We all have stories. But I think the stories that resonate are the ones where it's very clear to where it's leading. The other point that I would say with storytelling too is, you know, you have to have voice and you have to have authenticity. Stories aren't flat. Stories don't always have to be online. They don't always have to be in text. Strong stories can be in the oral tradition as well, and could be just as impactful or more impactful. And so I think you have to be cognizant of the voice of the story, and you have to be cognizant about the authenticity of the story. I can tell your story, but you could tell your story better because you've lived it and you bring that experience and your perspectives and sort of what you've gone through to bear. So I think that the strongest stories really bear the imprint of that person's voice and that person's set of experiences. And I think also, I think very strong stories tend to have more of what I would call an asset frame than a deficit frame. And what I mean by that is, if I think about, I did a project around opportunity youth. And sometimes, the narrative around opportunity, and opportunity youth are students, young adults aged 18 to 24 who have sort of been in and out of education and the workforce. And oftentimes the story around opportunity youth tends to be negative. They dropped out of school. They dropped out of careers. We're creating policies for them. We're creating practices for them. The asset frame flips that around and says that opportunity youths are the agents of their own change. They can help create the policies. They can help create the practices and the solutions in their communities to get an education or to get a career, to become more financially empowered. And so the extent that, stories could be told in the asset frame as opposed to always the deficit frame can sometimes help them resonate more too. And then lastly, I think narrative change, again, that's a term that we hear a lot. I tend to see narrative change as an essential step towards systems change. I think that's the end goal. Sometimes it's easy to think of narrative change as the end goal. Okay, we're changing the narrative. That's great. Took a lot of work to get there. But are we really changing things, right? Are we changing the system? Are we transforming the system like we need to? Like, are we transforming the healthcare system? Are we transforming the way we think about caregiving or education? Narrative change helps us get there for sure. But ultimately, I think the end goal is to change the system. And in terms of defining narrative change, I actually, I love the definition that was developed by ORS Impact, which is a research and evaluation organization based up in Seattle. And they define narrative change as the effort to challenge, modify, or replace existing narratives that perpetuate inequity and uphold an unjust status quo through the creation and deployment of new and different narratives. I think they also added different ways to measure narrative change, which is often, you talk a lot about, well, what is narrative change? How do you define it? But there isn't a lot of literature out there about how do you measure it? How do you know that narrative change is working and that it's having an impact? And I think some of the metrics that they've come up with and that I really agree with, and I've seen work, are you starting to see changes in media and cultural discourse? Are you starting to see changes in people's attitudes and beliefs? Are you starting to see changes in social norms? Are you starting to see policy change or changes in institutional practice or power dynamics? And I think if you have any combination of those metrics coming to light, then yeah, I think you're well on your way to changing the narrative.
That's very helpful definitions. And there's several things I just want to reemphasize. First of all, specific to thought leadership, I think now more than ever, that ability to get people to act is going to be more necessary than ever before. And I think that for me in the work that I do is always trying to create action for people to give time of their talent, their treasure, their testimony, their truth. So I just, yes, that need to message so that people act is critically important. Specific to the methods and sort of the avenues of sharing information, it obviously has grown expansively with social media and all of these apps. And so I, conversation for another time is how have those medians really shared and brought stories out, you know, the truth of those stories, right? So there's a whole nother conversation about mm-hmm. not only the platforms you use, but how those platforms have distributed stories, and then the question of those stories. And then I really, really appreciated the assets versus the deficit. That I'd mm-hmm. never heard of that framework. And so I think that's a valuable piece of information I'm gonna carry with me. And then clearly system change is really narrative change. And I like how that right. framing is right. done. All of that is very helpful, and all of that we can bring into our work, which brings us to, you know, why is storytelling so important specifically to philanthropy? In philanthropy, we are trying to create movements, create system change, to, you know, support causes, to build impact, to support, people and organizations. So why is the storytelling so important specifically to philanthropy?
Yeah, I would think I'll even, expand that to for this moment in time
Thank
right
you.
Now.
Yeah.
And we're sort of, in a period of uncertainty, and in many ways that's uncharted. And so I think it's more imperative than ever for philanthropy writ large, but also the nonprofit sector, to be able to be strong storytellers. It's critical because I think, we're talking about organizations and we're talking about funders that in many ways may have to sort of make up the difference in providing necessary and vital services to people. And so as a nonprofit organization, if you're looking for funding, the stronger you can tell the story about the work that you do and the people you serve in the communities where you work and where they live, you'll hopefully be in better shape. And likewise, philanthropy, which, has always, has sort of had a kind of a mixed reputation out there, and could maybe, just in a very general way, probably do a better job telling its story. Although that probably, there are many aspects of philanthropy which are probably doing it better than others at this point. Yeah. But again, the more that philanthropy and philanthropists can talk about the value of the work that they do and the impact that they can make, I think that's going to be very important. I think storytelling also allows philanthropy to, I think, attach the human experience to its programs as well, if it's done in the right way. I think it could hit home the human impact of its investments. We've all seen, right, a tendency to see a lot of philanthro speak and jargon, and that's valuable to a very small group of people that do that work. But to people who are the ultimate beneficiaries of what philanthropy can provide, you have to tell the story of that work in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to, so that's why storytelling, is important there. I think storytelling for nonprofits, again, I think it's, it can invite opportunities for funding. It can invite opportunities to further develop and scale and sustain the work that you do and the programs that you run and the organizations that you run. And so ultimately, storytelling can help philanthropy make the case for its value.
I wish we didn't have to make the case for our value.
Right.
Make the case for our value.
Even more so.
Yeah. Even more so. Yeah. And you sort of brought this up when you were talking about narrative change and sort of this definition of, measurement, not definition, but measurement. And I know that we talk a great deal about impact, like how are you measuring impact? And I think that we're seeing a lot more folks using data in their storytelling. Mm-hmm. Can you sort of shine some light on that and sort of how does that data help the story? And does the data take away from that, what you call human experience, if you will? So I think we need the data, but I don't want to lose that authentic voice that comes from the human experience and human story. So where's the balance? Thoughts?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I think you need both. And I would argue that data buttresses the human story. It buttresses and strengthens the human element of the story, because experience is critical, right? The experience that you're sharing, the lived experience that you're kind of relating in your story, of course that's important. But the more that you could back that up and reinforce it with statistics and evidence and fact, I think that makes her story even more powerful and compelling.
Agree.
And so, and you've seen, you know, stories, you know, in both directions, right? Stories that have too much data. And so you're diluting the power of that story. And likewise, you have the story that has a lot of emotion, which is, and passion, which you need, but it doesn't have the data, you know, or the evidence to really back that up. So you do need that balance. But I would say that, yeah, I think that data is extremely critical to ultimately telling the most powerful story.
First of all, Seth, it's been awesome to hang out with you. I know I get the pleasure of seeing you every 2 weeks in the IPA, so we'll see you in a couple weeks. I deeply appreciate your insights today. And where can folks find you if they have any questions or wanna reach out to you?
Yeah, I'm at EON Strategies, so Seth@EONStrategies.com. And you can go to my website, www.EONStrategies.com. Or yeah, just happy to talk to you by email. You can look me up on LinkedIn. I'm there. Yeah, definitely look forward to continuing the conversation.
And you are fun to follow on LinkedIn. Actually, even before I knew we were going to be connected through Daylight, I was loving your stories about taking walks in the dawn and how you were sharing about jigsaw puzzles. And I was like, wow, he is really just telling us about who he is. And I thought that that was so awesome. I think there's some value to being vulnerable, and it certainly is authentic. So you are an authentic human being, and I appreciate that about you, Seth. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining. Please stay tuned for the next episode. In the meantime, to learn more about Daylight and our Certified Impact Philanthropy Advisor Program, along with our new certificate program, please go to daylightadvisors.com. And please remember to subscribe. See you next time.